Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities. A skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust. Empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Demonstrators protesting Florida's Stand Your Ground law may have called it quits at the Capitol, but a Dream Defenders organizer says this is not the last you'll see of them.
We'll be back. You know, our story is just beginning.
Also this week, what does the word residency mean? Florida's legislative leaders want to know as they try to figure out if some lawmakers are really living in the districts they represent.
We have some who live in North Carolina half the time, and some who live in, you know, South Florida. Some who pretty much, when they're not in session, they pretty much travel.
We'll also take a trip to the home of Florida's world-famous oysters and look into charges of abuse at a Florida facility for mentally disturbed teens. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. We start this week with the monthly jobs numbers. Florida's unemployment rate stood at 7.1% in July, the same as in May and June. The State Department of Economic Opportunity said there was some growth in private sector fields such as automotive, sales and repair, home maintenance and garden supply, transportation and utilities, but that wasn't enough to budge the jobless index. Still, Governor Rick Scott released a brief video in which he highlighted the creation of 34,000 private sector jobs in the past month. The monthly private sector gains, though, were offset by a drop of some 9,400 local, state, and federal jobs across Florida, along with a slight dip in manufacturing jobs. Perhaps the best news for the governor, though, is that the July numbers keep the state below the national average, now at 7.4%, for the fifth consecutive month. Did the failure of a poll that could have triggered a special session lead to the Dream Defenders ending a month-long protest? Just how much support is there really for Florida's Stand Your Ground law? Sasha Cordner has the story.
I think their time has kind of run out.
That's what House Speaker Will Weatherford said just an hour before protesters at the Capitol announced they'd be leaving the Capitol after a 31-day-long sit-in in the governor's office. Since mid-July, the self-titled Dream Defenders have been demonstrating at the Capitol following the acquittal of George Zimmerman. He's the neighborhood watch leader who claimed he killed 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in self-defense. So the demonstrators urged Governor Rick Scott to call a special session to review Florida's Stand Your Ground law. While Scott met with them, he still refused their request.
I let them know I'm not going to call a special session. I believe in our Stand Your Ground and self-defense laws in our state.
Going through Governor Rick Scott is not the only way to get lawmakers to come to Tallahassee. The two presiding officers, the House Speaker and the Senate President, must jointly agree to call one as well. But they, like Scott, agreed not to call one. But there's still one more way, says Speaker Weatherford.
It's unprecedented. In our Constitution, it has this provision where if the presiding officers or the governor won't call a special session, then they can go poll the members and basically ask them if they want a special session. And so they had to get 20% of the House and senators to ask for the vote, and they were able to get that. And then we took a vote just the other day, and it appears that there are not enough votes within the body to have a special session.
By Wednesday, it was clear that the poll triggered by a group of Democratic lawmakers would not pan out in their favor. 96 lawmakers needed to say yes, but close to 90 of the 160-member legislature had already said no. House Democratic leader Perry Thurston says the poll was inspired by the work of the Dream Defenders, and he adds, this is not the end.
I'm not deterred, not one bit. I think that we become even more vigilant in terms of making sure that those things that need to be reviewed are reviewed. This was just a poll of whether the legislature thought that we should have a special session. I don't think if there's someone out there who thinks this law is perfect, then I would disagree with them. And I think that we should. It's probably our obligation to review the laws that we pass.
It's not something that the people of Florida universally would like to see happen. That bears out in all of the polling that's been done on Stand Your Ground. The people of Florida want the right to stand their ground. The people of Florida don't want to have a duty to retreat.
That's Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Shalimar, who's head of the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee and a vocal proponent of Florida Stand Your Ground law. While House Speaker Will Weatherford did not call a special session, he did call for a hearing to look into the law, and he tasked Gaetz with overseeing it. But several have criticized Gaetz for recent remarks he made that he would not change one comma on the law. Despite that, Gaetz says he's still keeping an open mind, adding that he's entitled to his own opinion.
I have a viewpoint. I support the Stand Your Ground law as written. But my role as the committee chairman is to ensure that we have a fair process and we'll have a fair opportunity for everyone to make their case. I just happen to be of the view that Floridians should not have to turn their back and run when they're attacked. And it's not just me. The Florida Sheriff's Association, a group that traditionally is pretty focused on public safety, has unanimously endorsed Stand Your Ground without any recommended changes.
But not all 67 Florida sheriffs are on board, like Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. 57 sheriffs unanimously voted at a recent conference. Israel, who had another engagement, did not attend the conference. But he says if he had, he would not have held the other 57 sheriffs' position on the law.
Stand Your Ground allows you to stand your ground. I don't believe that part of it is correct. I believe you should be obligated to get in your vehicle and leave the area and drive away and avoid that confrontation. You know, if the threat isn't immediate. So that's kind of where, you know, where I differ with Stand Your Ground, although I see a lot of it, you know, should stay. I think some parts of it, you know, I'd like to see retracted or altered, and that's kind of why I would vote no on the entirety of Stand Your Ground.
Israel says he'd like to see something legislatively done this upcoming legislative session, and whether or not that may happen is entirely up to the Republican-led legislature. Meanwhile, the Dream Defenders, the group hoping to repeal the law, say their work is not done. With the Capitol now empty, the Dream Defenders' Philip Agnew says they have not yet accomplished all what they came to do, but he says they did have some great successes, including getting Scott to meet with them and getting Republican leadership to hold an upcoming Stand Your Ground hearing. Agnew even has an upcoming debate scheduled with Representative Matt Gaetz regarding the law.
We had a whole lot of victories that really amounted to a really big move here politically. And now they're talking about issues and discussing issues that they refused to talk about or even acknowledge before. So we're happy for that. And overall, folks now know what we stand for the most part. And it's going to make it that much easier when we come back here September 23rd to talk about the issues that we're debating.
The Dream Defenders are planning to come back to the Capitol when lawmakers hold committee meetings in September. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. Still to come on Capitol Report, after abuse allegations at a Florida juvenile psychiatric facility, a lawmaker is calling for a review of state standards.
I'll tell you, I have a real problem with injecting some type of chemical sedative into a teenager or a 14-year-old.
The Army Corps of Engineers will not force Georgia to conserve more water. Now, Florida is taking legal action to protect its oyster industry.
To see it impacted by a man-made decision, by decisions being made by men, not by nature, not by some other change in the economy, but by a simple decision being made by another state, is just heartbreaking.
And after a two-year-long absence, a legendary Florida marching band returns to the collegiate scene this coming Labor Day. The state continues its probe into a South Florida juvenile psych facility where a girl's alleged abuse was caught on camera. As Jessica Palumbo reports, a Broward County state lawmaker is also calling for a legislative investigation of the facility. Representative Katie Edwards says the incident is emblematic of Florida's persistent failure to protect children in its care.
It's a video that's been viewed hundreds of thousands of times in a week online. The surveillance footage from the Citrus Center for Adolescent Treatment Service in Pembroke Pines shows police officers punching a girl in the face and then spraying her directly at the face with pepper spray. The footage is from April during a riot at the juvenile psychiatric facility. Recently, the state has gotten involved.
Last week, we received a call to our abuse hotline alleging abuse at the Citrus facility, and we take all allegations of abuse very seriously. We've opened up an investigation, and we're going to do our best to get to the bottom of those allegations.
That's Department of Children and Families spokesman Whitney Ray outside the department's Tallahassee headquarters. He says the state has placed children in its care at Citrus Center. The Agency for Healthcare Administration, which licenses the facility and makes rules for how residents can be restrained, is also investigating.
We also received a letter making some overarching allegations of what is being claimed as some systematic abuse and neglect mistreatment.
As first reported in the South Florida Sun Sentinel and Miami Herald newspapers, the alleged victim in the video is a ward of the state. Her public defender says the facility regularly uses inappropriate methods to restrain unruly residents, including injecting them with a chemical sedative that leaves them unconscious for long periods. Democratic State Representative Katie Edwards represents part of Broward County where the Citrus Center is located.
I don't see how punching a 14-year-old girl in the face or sitting on top of her and spraying pepper spray in her face or injecting her with what these teenagers are calling booty juice is helping to rehabilitate these troubled teens.
Edwards wrote a letter to Republican State Representative Richard Corcoran, who chairs the House Health and Human Services Committee, asking him to hold a hearing during next month's committee weeks.
I'm very interested in knowing, for example, the type of force that we're allowing our law enforcement officers and facility staff to be able to use to deal with these types of incidents.
Edwards says many of her constituents have emailed and called expressing concern about recent deaths of several children under state custody. She says it behooves lawmakers to evaluate the standards used in state-run and private facilities that house mentally ill children.
So I think really this incident is part of the overall picture of what's actually happening with the way that our state is administering these types of social service programs.
Edwards is still talking with House staff about the issue. No official agenda for the House and Human Services Committee has been released. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Several Florida Democratic lawmakers are facing questions about where they live. Some suspect the legislators are living outside of the districts they represent. It's an issue that arose after lawmakers drew new voting district lines in 2011, and Regan McCarthy reports it's raised the question of what it means to live somewhere.
When lawmakers drew new voting district lines and caused some upheaval in the Florida legislature, the changes pitted incumbents against incumbents and moved some district lines so lawmakers were no longer living in the districts they had been representing. But that's something Justin Levitt, who teaches law at Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, California, says can be expected, especially when the redistricting process changes, as it did this time when Florida's fair district amendments were applied for the first time.
It's a danger sign when it's dramatically shifted toward one party or the other, but that doesn't actually prove the case. It could well be that what you see is a sort of correction for the abuses of the past.
Levitt says that can happen even when independent commissions are given control of drawing a district's voting lines instead of leaving that up to the lawmakers. And he says that's often because commissions work to draw district lines that better adhere to already created communities. But he says the fact that so many of the lawmakers in Florida, who are now living outside of their past districts, are Democrats, is a bit of a red flag. And that's an issue Representative Perry Thurston has raised. Thurston, a Democrat from Fort Lauderdale, has faced some questions about his residency lately.
The question that should be asked is, well, if Representative Thurston has lived there the first 7 years that he served, why is it now becoming an issue? Well, it's becoming an issue because when you have partisanship and drawing the lines, you'll have what you have in my situation where the leadership draws the line directly behind my house.
Thurston says he'd be interested in looking into creating an independent commission to take care of redistricting in Florida. But in the meantime, he says he's living, in his words, squarely within his district. And Thurston isn't the only one who's faced those questions. Tallahassee Democratic Republican Alan Williams has come under similar scrutiny.
So using our voter software, the registration software, we can look up voter by name and we are looking here at Alan Williams' record, and he is the representative for House District 8. And then here is the audit trail we're looking at. It shows you the different transactions that have happened with any record, and this particular record for him shows that on April 27, 2012, there was a change of address from Stony Creek Way to Olive Avenue.
That's Chris Moore, GIS and Demographics Manager at Leon County's Election Supervisor's Office. He says after redistricting, William's Stony Creek address was no longer in his district, but the Olive Avenue house, where William says he grew up, is. But some question whether, despite getting new addresses, Williams and others in the same boat are really living in their district houses. And it turns out that's a hard question to answer. Just ask William's Olive Avenue neighbors.
I see him come in at night. I see him leave in the morning.
I haven't seen Alan in a while.
Right now, there's no clear definition for what it means for a lawmaker to live in his or her district. The U.S. Census Bureau defines the idea of what's called usual residence as a place a person lives and sleeps most of the time. But how does that apply to Williams? Here's the explanation he gave me when I met him outside the house he keeps that's in his current district.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Are you sleeping here a couple nights a week?
I have the opportunity to represent District 8 in a way that I think is hopefully been good for my constituents. And again, around the issue of residency and where, one lives, I think you have to go back to the definition of, as far as it from a political perspective, are you engaged? Are you invested? And if so, and do you meet the intent of the rule?
And Senate President Don Gates says he wants to work toward creating clearer guidelines for lawmaker residency.
What we need, I think, is more specificity. Is it enough that you vote in the district that you represent? Is it enough that you homestead there? Is it enough that you pay the water bill there, you get your newspaper there? What are the real tests of residency?
Gates and House Speaker Will Weatherford have asked Florida's Secretary of State to collect information about where each lawmaker is registered to vote by the first of next month. But more with the Leon County Elections Office says people aren't required to do anything to prove they live somewhere before being registered to vote there. The state's leaders are also asking their lawyers to examine Florida's residency rules. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
In an increasingly partisan environment, Florida's local, state, and federal politicians are joining forces in support of the state's troubled oyster industry. As Ryan Bank reports, elected officials and activists stood shoulder to shoulder in Apalachicola this week, a day after the federal government declared the North Florida area a fishery disaster.
Welcome to beautiful Franklin County, Florida.
More than 200 community members filled the steps of the Franklin County Courthouse, waving signs, chanting slogans, and signing petitions. There was also no shortage of politicians in Franklin County Tuesday. Those running for office, like Democratic congressional candidate Gwen Graham, and those holding office, like her opponent, Republican Congressman Steve Sutherland, found themselves on the same side of an issue. State Senator Bill Monfort, whose district includes Apalachicola, told a thunderous crowd oysters aren't a partisan issue.
I'm a Democrat, he's a Republican, and we're going to make sure this thing works, okay?
In a rare move, Florida Senators Marco Rubio and Bill Nelson, also on opposite ends of the political divide, held a Senate hearing in Apalachicola to officially document the recently declared fishery disaster in the small North Florida town. The Bay's oyster industry has been spiraling towards collapse in recent years, and Senator Nelson says the reason why is clear.
Over 2,000 jobs are related to harvesting or the processing of oysters on Florida's Gulf Coast. And while federal and state agencies are working together to help those fishermen that have been affected, the primary cause of the disaster, a lack of fresh water.
That lack of water has led to oystermen scraping shallow waters for a couple of bags of bivalves where they used to fill their boats. Since the Fed has declared the area a fishery disaster, it makes them eligible for disaster relief money. But appropriating the funds from Washington is far from certain. And Senator Marco Rubio says even if the money is appropriated, it's not a long-term solution.
They want to stay in this business. I mean, this is the business they want to do. This is what their families have done. This is what the community is grounded on. At the end of the day, unless we fix this water problem, this funding isn't going to solve that.
The water problem is a decades-long dispute among the states of Alabama, Florida, and Georgia over water consumption, commonly referred to as the Tri-State Water Wars. Florida contends the state of Georgia is using water irresponsibly by hoarding the shared streams to metropolitan areas like Atlanta's. Florida Senator Nelson says the dispute has a simple solution. The Army Corps of Engineers, that's in charge of parceling out water usage, could update its management plan. But the Corps' Mobile District Engineer, Colonel John Chitka, says his hands are tied.
But we cannot dictate. We do not have the authorities to impose conservation on Florida, Alabama, or Georgia. It's not in our authorities.
Since the Corps can't force states to conserve more water, Senator Bill Nelson says Florida is left with two options: pass new legislation in Washington, or get the governors of all three states to sign on to a water agreement.
How do you eat this?
I'm kidding.
With the taste of oysters fresh on his tongue, Governor Rick Scott announced in the absence of a change to the Army Corps' water manual, federal legislation, or a tri-state agreement, he would be suing Georgia.
You heard the number of oysters that are coming out of this bay is down 90%, something like that. So it's having a dramatic impact, and it's because Georgia has taken our water. The Corps of Engineers has not worried about us. That's why Florida is going to file suit against Georgia, take this all the way to the Supreme Court, make sure we do the right thing for the families that live right here.
As expected, Georgia's Governor Nathan Deal wasn't impressed by what he calls Scott's political grandstanding. Deal declined to comment on tape, but did issue a statement saying Scott has had a compromise on his desk for 2 years. In his statement, Deal says, while the timing seems to work for political purposes, it's ironic this comes at a time when Florida and Georgia are experiencing historically high rainfall. Scott is expected to file the suit accusing Florida's northern neighbor of water theft in September. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
It's back to school time in Florida. All over the state, anxious parents are going down the kids' must-have checklist. New school clothes? Check. Notebooks, folders, pens, protractor, and backpack? Check. Health insurance? Well, maybe not. State officials guesstimate there are nearly 500,000 Florida children with no health care coverage of any kind. But since 1998, the state has had a low-cost health care option called Florida Kid Care. It's been a big help for families like that of Misty Ramsey, who lives in Liberty County with her two sons.
I heard about Kid Care through advertisements and their brochures. I'm here today to let other parents know what a blessing it has been to my youngest son, Carter. He was born extremely premature and has required so many medical services that we would not have been able to afford without insurance.
Through an interpreter, Garcia Valencia of Leon County voices similar support for the program.
Florida Kid Care es muy bueno, muy buen servicio.
It's a good insurance with great service.
Florida Kid Care was a creation of the Florida legislature and is administered by the Florida Healthy Kids Corporation, which is headed by Executive Director Rich Robledo.
Florida Kid Care has been around for about 15 years. We've been providing coverage for children from birth to 18, low-cost health coverage. It gives the kids the access to care that we all need access to care, but we especially want to make sure that our kids get it.
Kid Care has near universal support among the state's top officials, such as Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater, who says the state of Florida made a promise to families at this time last year.
That we would go out and do everything we possibly could to enroll more children who were uninsured into this program so that they would have a healthier environment, an opportunity to get back to school and be focusing on the schoolwork and other activities and know there'd be peace of mind in the household that the insurance was taken care of.
The number of children enrolled in the Kid Care program has been on the rise. In the past 12 months, the number has grown by more than 62,000. As of now, there are just over 2 million Florida children covered by Florida Kid Care. Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration Secretary Liz Dudek says that's a good start.
But for all of those children that we serve, which is great, there's still somebody else that we could serve. So what we would want is to see as many children covered as we possibly can. And what I would challenge everybody to do is find a person to pass the word on to.
That's because, unlike a number of years ago, the Florida Kid Care program has virtually no advertising or promotional budget. Florida Healthy Kids' Rich Robledo says the agency has come up with a smartphone app to simplify the sign-up process.
They key in their zip code and their phone number, and that app will find somebody out there who will contact them and help them to enroll. So we try to stay as current as we can and as helpful as we can to make it easy for the families to enroll.
But getting the word out that the program actually exists and that many kids are eligible is still a challenge. That's why, Robledo says, so many Florida children remain uninsured, more in fact than in most other states.
I think we are ranked 47th out of the 51 states and the District of Columbia. But as I mentioned earlier, we have been making tremendous progress over the last couple of years in terms of bringing that down. I believe it was 17.6% of Floridians were uninsured 3 years ago, and it's now down to 11.9. So we're making tremendous progress.
Until the legislature frees up some Kid Care advertising money, Robledo and other advocates are counting on Floridians to spread the word themselves. Florida A&M University's Marching 100 will take the field Labor Day weekend in the school's season opener. It'll be the first time in nearly 2 years the group has been allowed to perform. The band was suspended following the hazing death of one of its drum majors. And as Lynn Hatter reports, the university says it will work to prove times have changed.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Florida A&M University Marching Band.
On Florida A&M's campus, a sense of normalcy almost as band members get back to their first love. It's a year of starting over for FAMU's Marching 100 band.
Feet! 1, 2, 3, up! Y'all need to say it because ain't nobody barely do it. So say it. 1, 2, 3, up!
Rehearsals are already underway. The band is known for its innovative pageantry and high-stepping performances. And baritone player Ronald Gray says the suspension was rough.
I'm excited to be back. Like, it throws you out of kind of rhythm. You know, you're so used to marching in the fall. You've done it since high school, and then you're missing for a year. So it's like you're missing a part of your life necessarily.
Now FAMU's Marching 100 band is about a third of its size before the suspension after the hazing death of drum major Robert Champion. Also new this year is terminology. Band director Sylvester Young says there are no more drum majors.
In other words, it's sort of like retiring a jersey. That term has been retired with this band because of that. That's just out of respect on my part. And that's what we're living with, that's field command.
Champion's death raised the profile of hazing, especially in other historically black university marching bands. And during a recent orientation meeting, FAMU President Larry Robinson said the death and subsequent fallout were not easy.
Nobody was out there laughing at us. No one celebrated our difficulties. It was painful everywhere. Our circumstances caused everyone to take a look and ask themselves, could that have been us?
FAMU's marching band now has limits on its practice hours. There's also a hazing czar and director of compliance. The school still faces a wrongful death lawsuit, and several former students await trial in Champion's death. Despite the legal problems, new students are still joining the band. Beverly Rohan's son Eric is a freshman baritone player.
We've had the conversation that you have a mind of your own. You know what's right, you know what's wrong. You do not participate in those activities. If you see it going on, you report it. So we made that abundantly clear.
But members say it's going to take a lot of work to rebuild the reputation of a band some had considered one of the best in the nation. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Banks, Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzewski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: the Able Trust, committed to helping high school students with disabilities graduate and advance to jobs, post-secondary education, and a bright future. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment, on the web at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.